Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Welcome back to RCR Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And as we're prone to do often on our show, is we try to get guests from around the world that talk especially or educate us more on especially climate change, because we know in New Zealand, we're only getting, it seems to be, one side of the story. And it's the side that is very expensive. We get net zero rammed down our throat, and the cost of that is never told. But today we have, beaming in from Tampa, which is about 28 degrees north in Florida, so a lot warmer than New Zealand, we have Professor David Dilley, a meteorologist of 50 years' experience. And he has written prolifically on climate events, I suppose, weather events, predictions, and has several podcasts out with Tom Nelson. And we came upon one last week that sort of spun us into the need to get Professor Dilley on, and that was called Global Warming Will Be Dead by 2030. Now, to start that discussion, welcome, Professor Dilley, to Greenwashed. You've put all your previous work, it seems, into this video, but would you like to start at the beginning of your career and just sort of then lead us through to where we are today?
Oh, okay. Thank you for having me on. And yes, I'm a former meteorologist of NOAA, the National Weather Service here in the United States. And also I was in the United States Air Force as a meteorologist. Once I left NOAA, I created or formed the company that I have now, Global Weather Oscillations. And to get on, see all the podcasts, you can go to globalweatheroscillations.com, or an easier one to remember is globalweathercycles.com. And I have all four podcast videos on there, which will lead you through everything you want to know about climate change, the real climate change. And here at Global Weather, I created what I call Climate Pulse Technology, based on the Milinkovitch cycles, which is proven science. And I just kind of took the subsets of the cycles and made Climate Pulse Technology out of it. It's really basically electromagnetic interactions between the Earth, Moon, Sun, gravitational cycles. Everything in the universe, including our bodies and the inner core of the Earth, is electromagnetic, so it only makes sense. And that's pretty much, what we do with the cycles is we track weather events, historical weather events, by using the cycles of the electromagnetic cycles. So by doing so, here in the United States, every year I predict the hurricane landfalls. And I've had about a 90% accuracy on predicting hurricane landfalls, where they're going to landfall 6 months before it happens, by using historical cycles as connected to the gravitational cycles. Because the gravitational cycles, what they do is they change the position of the Atlantic high pressure system, and it would even in the South Pacific also, or South Atlantic, changes position of the high pressure system. So that changes the track of storms. It's just common sense. It's what it is.
Yeah. And so when people, you know, understanding that at a very low level, when people talk about La Nina and El Nino weather systems, this is all part of your thinking and how you do the predictions?
It is. I use the historical cycles, the gravitational cycles, to track even the El Nino events. I know when the next El Nino event is going to occur. And so we can track the big events just through the changes or the interactions between the Earth, Moon, Sun.
Right. And so the demand for your work is by what, military, by civic entities like a city, or on who buys your services, really?
Well, for hurricanes, insurance companies, for one thing, because they need to know, well, how much reinsurance do I have to purchase if my state is going to get hit hard? And also for companies that need to stock up on materials for a hurricane strike, things like that. And even homeowners, they even purchase some of my forecasts. So it's kind of a multiple range of people.
And Professor Talid, I was looking at your website and I see all of these in your store. I also see very detailed videos, but nowhere do I see in it a hysteria being whipped up about carbon decarbonization, which is what seems to be the prevalent school of thought, that if we reduce it to climate change or climate variation, as Don often refers it to, just to reducing the amount of carbon, we can control the world. We can control our atmosphere. We can have predictable weather patterns. What are your thoughts on that?
That's right. And all the government agencies, they know that we have weather cycles. We have what we call an interglacial warm period that comes about every 120,000 years. In between that period is the glacial period, very cold. So what happens every 120,000 years? Well, first I'll start. When we go into a glacial period, the oceans cool down and they absorb carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. They bring the levels down a lot, probably take about 50% of the carbon dioxide and put it back in the oceans. Then when you warm up on an interglacial period, the oceans release the carbon dioxide. And that's why we have an increase in carbon dioxide during the cycles. The temperatures warm up first on Earth, and then the carbon dioxide follows. It's not carbon dioxide causing climate change. It's the cycles of a temperature causing the carbon dioxide to rise. So they have it backwards, is what happens. And we do know that we have cycles every 120,000 years via samples of ice core samples in the Antarctic. The ice core samples go back, a million years or so. Very deep bed of ice down in the Antarctic. What happens in the ice core, in the Arctic, is when ice forms, the first, about 6,000 years of the ice, they call it new ice. Once it gets to old ice, 6,000 years later, the air bubbles get trapped in the ice, locked into place. And they take those air bubbles and they look at the air bubbles in laboratories and determine get an idea of how much carbon dioxide there was
in the atmosphere then
10,000 years ago or 300,000 years ago. But that's a mean value over a course of about 1,000 to 6,000 years. It's a mean value because the ice is so compacted. When you're down 12,000 feet in the ice core, that's very compacted ice, and you can't tell 1 year from 1,000 years. So they can't pinpoint, okay, in the year such and such, we had 280 parts per million. They can't do that. They have to take the mean value and then determine. And anytime you take a long-term mean over 1,000 to 7,000 years, you lower the amount because you flatten out the curve is what you do. So on the ice core samples, they say that we've never been above 300 parts per million. When we have an interglacial period, we approach 300 parts per million. When we go in an ice age, the coldest part of the ice age, we're down to about 180 parts per million. That's how much carbon dioxide the oceans take out of the atmosphere, absorb. They absorb it to give back during the warm periods. Well, the issue is, they say we've never been above 380 parts per million. There's two problems here, and I handle that in the podcast number 97. One issue is during the formation of a new ice turning to the old ice locking in the air bubbles, a lot of the carbon dioxide escapes back in the atmosphere, so it's not recorded in the ice core samples. It's out. It's gone. It's not recorded. So because of that, the laboratory samples are going to have a lower amount of carbon dioxide than there really was during that period. And the second problem is they take a long-term mean of it over a course of 1,000 to 6,000, 7,000 years. Anytime you take a mean value, you lower the amount. It's sort of like if you have a high temperature of 90 degrees and a low temperature 60 degrees, or let's say 70 degrees, low temperature 70 degrees, but mean value is 80. Does that mean you've never been up to 90? No.
Yeah.
The mean says you've never been up to 90. No, you have been. Your normal high temperature is 90. And this is what happens on the ice cores. Because of this, I did research on it, taking into account the mean value and the amount of carbon dioxide lost to the atmosphere before the ice bubbles get locked in. And what I found is the carbon dioxide, rise in carbon dioxide since 1850, is 80% natural when you do the correction to the ice core readings. 80% natural. In the podcast 97, there's also research that I show in there from the three physicists. They did a correction to the NOAA's formula. They say it's 80% natural rise since 1850. And then I looked at a study on plant stomata, which I don't have time to explain it all here now, but I talk about that in podcast number 97. That also says the rise is 80% natural. Now, the problem is NOAA and the IPCC says the rise is 100% fossil fuel, and it's not. It's only 20% fossil fuel. That's because they don't take into account the corrections. They just take the face value of the ice core samples and they say, that is it. And that is bad science.
So we are looking at the ice core samples at one point in time. So obviously you don't have the exact data. And even for a layperson like me, if you are in a interglacial or if you're in a glacial period, you would have less plant activity, less photosynthesis, less amount of CO2, wouldn't you? And when you come out and you warm up, the plant activity will start. I'm just talking about land, not sea here. It seems quite logical to think that temperature rise would lead to an increase in CO2 and not the other way around. But that doesn't seem to be what's propounded here. And IPCC, what an organization that's core role was to find out, research further into anthropogenic, that's man-made climate change. They wouldn't want to get the, science themselves out of existence, would they? So they keep on hamming it up.
It's so political is what it is.
It's political really science.
Very political. And what they do is they take research papers from universities. And remember, a university, their research divisions live from grant money. And a grant, when you apply for a grant, the grants are worded in such a way that, we want to see what the relationship is between a certain thing and global warming or man-made global warming. And that's what you have to show in the grant money. When you get the grant money, you have to show a relationship. It's not an open-ended. You can't do the research and come back and say, no, there's no relationship. Well, you'd never get the grant if you did that. So that's politically driven to get the answer they want is what it is. And we see that all the time on other grants. Say some food companies will come out and say, margarine is the best product. Our science shows you have to switch to margarine, stay away from butter. That's because the margarine company put out grants to study it, and they got the answer they wanted. Well, a year later, another researcher come out and say, margarine is terrible. Here's a new study that butter is great. So it depends. The grant money is what drives the agenda. And you have to be careful what you put out for grant money. And this is the fault of the government agencies. They're giving the universities grant money only for human-induced climate change, not for natural cycles. So they're studying just one avenue, and that's all they want to see. They have tunnel vision just to get their agenda on what they want. And it's very, very skewed science, very skewed.
So Professor, you have to wonder why society allows this constant barrage of misinformation coming at us at great cost. And I'm not sure if what it's called in the United States, but in our country, in Great Britain and in the EU countries, this big push to net zero by 2050 is often talked about as if it's going to be a fabulous time. It's not. There's hardly ever a cost attached to it when it's in mainstream media, although in New Zealand we have a British economist engineer said it's going to cost us $550 billion by 2050. So that's a significant chunk of cash for a small country. And I think in the EU, in the UK, it's £1.5 trillion. Mm-hmm. I mean, is society ready to step up to the plate and say, we've had enough of this? We just want to get on with life and enjoy what we have and make sure that we use the resources we have wisely. Do you think we're ready for this honesty at all in the political sense?
Well, I'm afraid people are brainwashed, and they're brainwashing the young people. The church I go to here in the United States, our priest, he loves one slide that I have about what's the percentage of each gas in the atmosphere. He loves it. He'll go out, and when he's at a meeting, he'll ask people. They could be the leaders at a school, even. And he says, how much of the atmosphere, what is the percentage of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? The typical answer is 20 to 60%. Of the atmospheric gases are carbon dioxide. No, it isn't. It's 0.04%. And the amount of fossil fuel burning carbon dioxide is 0.004%. That's 0.004%. That's ridiculous. That's not enough to cause global warming. When the dinosaurs roamed way back 100 million years ago, right now, we're sitting around 420 parts per million on carbon dioxide. Back then, it was about 1,600 parts per million. Was the planet dead? No, we had big, big animals, vegetation fantastic. So what's wrong with 420 parts per million? Nothing.
Nothing at all. And in fact, one of your papers exposed to me something I hadn't thought about, and that was the increase and decrease in CO2 in the I think it's the troposphere annually through the seasons. Obviously in the summer, the plants are taking up more CO2, and in the winter they're releasing it. I hadn't even thought of that before. So we worry about these minor trace gases at our peril. And in New Zealand, just to put the constant picture that we talk about here is this attack on farming and methane, and it is even a more minuscule trace gas than any of the others that we've talked about, and yet we're trying to demonize it in this country and tax it, for goodness sake. Can you believe it? We're trying to tax it in this country. They've had 20 years of this coming at farmers, and they demonize farming and ruminant animals, which is our predominant export earner. Why would a society do that to itself? Yeah, it's not something you can answer really.
Well,
but
yeah, they're crazy on that. What they don't know is the most important greenhouse gas. What is the most important greenhouse gas? Water vapor. Water vapor, it composes anywhere from 1 to 4% of the atmospheric gas, where carbon dioxide is 0.04%. So water vapor is most important. So I guess we should ask the politicians, should we take water vapor out of the atmosphere? Should we do that? Will that cause global cooling? Will it bring down the temperature? It probably would, but we'd also have tremendous droughts is the issue too.
Yeah.
So the thing is, the politicians, they're agenda-driven, and they are unaware about any cycles prior to 1850. You talk to any person, especially a young person, well, we've had 6 global warming cycles since the year 800 AD. And they say, no, we've only had this one. That's untrue. Because they feed them just 1850 to now. Nothing happened prior to 1850. Everything was good. Everything was static. Carbon dioxide stayed the same. Temperatures stayed the same. I guess we always had cold winters and hot summers. Nothing changed. No, it's like you said, variability of the climate.
Yeah.
I like that term.
Professor Tilley, you mentioned insurance agents, companies, and others buy your forecasts of hurricanes. Now, in New Zealand, the cost of insurance has gone up hugely in recent times. Most people have seen, there's some who have even seen a 100% jump, but a 40, 50% jump year on year, and there's more in the works. Have you seen any increase in, say, whatever phenomena happens in around Florida, your hurricanes, thunderstorms, and so on? Because our insurance, of course, seems to get this data from some place where everything is increasing.
Well, as far as it goes for hurricanes, hurricanes go in specific cycles. Mm-hmm. I have 11 hurricane zones for the United States. Every zone has different cycles in it. Some of the zones go quiet for 10 years. Then they'll go into the active cycle where they'll have a tremendous amount of hurricanes over a 7, 8, 9 year period. Then the cycle quiet off again. People don't realize it's so cyclical. And one thing that drives the hurricanes is the Atlantic temperature oscillation. People don't know about that either. The Atlantic Ocean was very warm from about 1885 to 1905, and it cooled down for 70 years, warmed up again around the 1950s, somewhere 70 years later, and warmed up, and we had a lot of hurricanes, then it cooled down. Now we're in another warm cycle of the ocean, and we're having hurricanes. This is all cyclical, all cyclical. And even Pacific Ocean has similar types of cycles where the Pacific Ocean will cool down, and then about every 30 to 40 years, it'll be in a warm phase cycle, then cool down, 30 years later, get into a warm cycle again. And people just are not looking at the cycles. And this is what we do. I'm all about cycles of the atmosphere and the oceans.
What people are looking at, I think, with having lost their sense of history, is a very, very short cycle. Just one summer, 1 year, or 2 years, or just a decade. As you say, if you look at the Earth as 116,000 years, roughly those sort of cycles, many of these things make sense. But we don't do that, do we? It's just comparing this summer to last summer, this March to last March. And when you look at our Earth, which is nearly 5 billion years old, that's just a blip in time. And yet, that's what we are focused on, a very small time horizon. We're not looking at the complete picture here.
Mm-hmm. What they need to know is we're at the very peak or pinnacle of the 120,000-year warm period. The warm period only lasts about 8,000 years. We came out of the glacial period 8,000 years ago, and it was much warmer 6,000 years ago than today. It was much warmer 1,000 years ago than today, because now we're cooling down, and we're almost ready to really come off the pinnacle and temperature really cool rapidly as we head towards the next glacial period. But we have that 120,000 year interglacial warm period. We're at the peak of that. We're supposed to be warm. We have a 1200 year warm period that comes every 1200 years. We're at the peak of that. We're supposed to be warm. We've had six global warming cycles since the year 800 AD. We're at the peak of the global warming cycle number six. We're supposed to be warm. That's three cycles working right together right now. We are supposed to be warm, not cold. And what we people don't understand is we've had five global cooling cycles during that period, during the past 1,200 years. Now we're looking for global cooling cycle number six, and that's coming. And due to the ocean cycles, global warming will be dead by 2030.
And the probability, you will have done a probability risk assessment on that. Are you 95, 99% sure?
Well, this past year, they, of course, NOAA and the IPCC said, well, the world has had its warmest year on record. Yes. One thing they do is they take the oceans, which cover 71% of the area of Earth, 71%. And the oceans were all warm. Then they add in the land area temperatures. Then they take a mean value of that and say that, you're above or below normal of the mean. Well, 71% of the globe is oceans, and they're all warm. The Pacific Ocean, right now, we had very, very warm water across the equatorial region due to a El Nino that is now ending. That El Nino peaked in 2023, came into 2024. In another month, along the equator, it's all going to be colder than normal water. And also the Pacific Ocean, going back to past 500 years, they come in and out of warm phase to cool phase, warm phase to cool phase. They're going to go into the cool phase of the Pacific Ocean also within the next year. So the whole Pacific Ocean is going to cool down, not just along the equator. And the Atlantic, that warm phase that we're in now is also going to end right around 2030. In 2030, expect the temperatures to be back to normal. And then after that, by 2031, 32, colder than normal in the Atlantic. So by 2030, you're going to have both oceans a lot colder than today. And if you add that into 71% of the Earth's surface into the formula, you're going to be cooler than normal. Global warming will be dead.
Yep. Well, we need to be hearing this from a lot more people. That was the best way to present it I've heard. It comes through to my brain as if, heck, all this fervor for we're going to be cooked is terminal, and hopefully we can get some peace, we can get some sleep. But as I've said before to Jaspreet many times, that climate change is like the world's greatest job scheme ever devised. There's plenty of people feeding off of it, and we've got to make them have some conscience very soon. And hopefully, that sort of output from you, Professor, is going to help. One thing I would like to dwell on for a minute is the instrumentation. Part of your papers talks about proper or the rigorous, the best instruments haven't been around to do the monitoring of these things. For instance, 1958 was one point you use in your papers, and 1978 is another. And you talk about having proper instruments. Can you just explain that a little bit? Because we do know that, for instance, a thermometer, I think, was first used around 1650. In the UK. So why didn't we have good instrumentation until recently, relatively recently?
Well, really, most of the good instruments came in late 1800s to early 1900s. This is why data in the United States, they only go back to 1900, pretty much. So what we've had is, this is the first global warming cycle that we've ever had instruments to record it, the first time. We have never had instruments to record going into a global cooling cycle. So most of the governments and universities do not know what to look for a signal that we're going into global cooling, because we have never had instruments. It's just the ice core data that are approximate data. It's not a thermometer, or it didn't completely catch the carbon dioxide back when. It's just they call it proxy data. Approximate. That's all it is. It's approximate. It gives you a sense of what happened, but it's not a true recording. And we need to change that narrative, because everyone thinks, well, that CO2 and the temperature, that's etched in stone. That's, by God, that's etched in stone. We've never been warmer than that or colder than that. And that's not true. We're very young. Only good instrument readings during the past 100 years, really. So we can't take that and completely compare it to something that was 1,000 years ago or even 500 years ago. That's like comparing apples to oranges.
And so trying to flesh that out even further, you know, in recent months, we've been told that last year was the warmest on record, or there's things that are always the most or the hottest or sometimes the wettest. Sometimes there's more, you know, hurricanes and tornadoes than ever before. So effectively, people are abusing what recent instruments and data is showing them. Is that how it is? They're milking it? They're basically saying, we can make this work for us, for our agenda?
They are abusing it. This is one reason why the global warming alarmists will not tell you what occurred before 1850. Mm. We have never had a global warming cycle prior to 1850, according to them. They don't want you to know. That's censoring. Everything is censored.
Yeah. And, you know, I often talk to Jaspreet about it, and yeah, we both live in rural areas, and I look around and I see none of my neighbors questioning any of this. They believe, believe what's being told to them, and they're willing to sort of accept that, you know, they're going to have to pay something to get out of this hole. And of course, I'm saying to them, you don't have to pay anything to get out of this hole. In fact, we should probably be paid to, more for our produce, actually. That would be one thing, but that's around the consumer demand. So look, it's about how do we get the circuit breaker here? I know in the States, I occasionally watch Professor John Kennedy, and he humiliates even bankers of global note. He's even humiliated them in Senate hearings. And still we don't get any change. I mean, he takes them apart. They have no idea, as you talked about earlier, they have no idea how much CO2 is in the atmosphere. They don't know what a trace gas is, really. And yet these people are making the agenda. They're making sure they hold on to it at great cost. So, you know, do you think in your country, is there any politician, apart from John, I think Ted Cruz might have a bit of a go at this, that really wants to lift the game and say, look, we just can't continue this. Oh, it's the new Green Deal. We can't keep endorsing this stuff. We can't keep voting for it. I mean, you're $35 trillion in the hole as government debt or federal debt. What's going to be the circuit breaker? There has to be one, doesn't there?
Well, we need education for one thing. Mm. And this, I'm trying to get people to get some of my information to senators and representatives into the government. So they need to be taught. They're all brainwashed on their agendas. I was talking to one person, his son is in a state senator in one of the states here. and they were talking about climate change. And in the political party there, some of them said, well, we need to bring carbon dioxide down to zero. That's how dumb they are. The thing is, all plant life will die if we go below 180 parts per million.
Mm. Yes.
So really, they do not have a clue. The young people do not have a clue because they're being taught the, well, the woke narrative, if you want to call it that. They're just not being taught science anymore. It's all being run by the agenda-driven. They've taken over the schools, changed all the science programs, so that the children just don't know what's going on.
No, they just don't. I have this picture in my head by 2030 when, you know, there should be some people freezing by then if we head into a cold period. I have this picture. Cartoonists could have a field day of people sitting around a fire, mm-hmm. wearing their furs and saying, we need to keep the temperature rise below 1.5 degrees by 2100. We must do it because, yeah, it's going to be crazy what we are heading into.
It is.
Going to be a field day for some.
It should be mandatory that anyone in government views my latest podcast so they learn about science. Yes. They need to, if they want to be in an elected office, they need to see both sides of the aisle, and they're not. And I do have a friend that's going to try to get me into the right political party to do some teaching if we have the right candidate win our election.
Yeah, well, look, you're in the right you're in the right state. As far as I'm concerned, you've got the best governor in the states, and you are.
Oh, we do. Yes, he's very good, and he has a lot of the programs like Trump, Donald Trump, and the world needs Donald Trump. Really do. We've gone astray since he was kicked out of office. And it's really, it seems like it's in every country, they're doing the same thing. Same thing, all of them, they're just going, it's very chaotic. And no one's being taught the truth on anything. The media, we all know that's the issue on it. The media is owned by the people that want the agendas, and you can't get the other side of the issue across. You can't do it. So we have to rely on podcasts. Podcasts are really the big thing right now, because you cannot get to the big media, and even some of the big media are afraid to talk about it. If they want to talk about, say, what I'm showing, they're afraid to really dig into it because they'll get slammed.
Yep. We're in New Zealand, we're doing in our local region. So we have councils that sort of administer the local amenities and public amenities and and the environment. And Jaspreet and I have both given submissions recently to a hearing. And you know, no matter what we tell these people, they don't want to believe. And we're only once over lightly. If they were to listen to your podcast, watch and listen, they surely would have to have a conscience and say, we just can't waste any more money on this. We just need to go to business as usual and keep our infrastructure as good as we can. But no, they're spending millions of dollars around this country, building into this, into their plans, all the negative future. And it's just galling.
That's a good point, because we're putting all the money into global warming. No research into
global cooling.
As far as I know, there isn't any grant money available for natural cycles. It's all for global warming and what's causing global warming. The thing is, we're getting prepared for something that's not going to happen. On climate change, global cooling is always much more dangerous than global warming would ever be. much more dangerous. We've cut back on a lot of our fuel supplies and how we get fuel. And we're going to need that if we go into a pretty nasty global cooling cycle. You can't do it from just solar panels or things like that. And a lot of the colder areas, they're having you put in heat pumps. And they're probably doing it down in your area, heat pumps.
Yes.
Well, you start getting some really nasty cold winters, much colder winters, and the heat pumps aren't going to do it.
Nope.
They're not going to cut it.
No, they've got to be, if anything, they've got to be the ground source type heat pump. So you take the heat from in, deep in the ground. And second, and they're much more expensive than the current ones we have mostly in New Zealand are the air sourced ones. And secondly, what we are doing here, and it's adding massive cost to our building, we are putting a much better insulation in the new buildings, which on the face of it's a good idea, but it's adding massive cost ahead of our economic wealth or worthiness to pay for it. So all this stuff is like we're trying to be ahead of the game on warming, but we're not. And so in insulation terms, we are perhaps. Because insulation is good for warming and cooling, actually. So that works. But the other side of it is just pretty ordinary. And of course, the push in Australia right now is to have, by the current government, there is wind and solar and big batteries. But of course, they've got an opposition who's now pushing nuclear power in Australia, which, on the face of it, seems to be the logical thing if we're going to have a global cooling phase, a significant cooling phase ahead, where wind and solar aren't really going to cut the mustard, as you've sort of just intimated.
That's right. And, we have to really go on some of tried and true and be prepared for global cooling. Eventually, we will get better technology 30, 40, 50 years down the road to switch off of fossil fuel. But that's down the road a little bit. But we have plenty of gas and oil available to get us through until we get the better technology, better than solar panels, better than wind.
Well, it is going to take a circuit breaker by government change around the world. We have had one in New Zealand recently, and hopefully it's going to turn the clock back a little bit to have actually turn it forward and get past this nonsense. And hopefully your country does it soon, and hopefully Australia does it soon. I mean, no political bias from me here, Professor Dilley. I'm over it. I've been like you've been 50 years at the coalface of this. I've been 30, and I can't believe so many people can lie to you in your face and as if they know everything is their way. Everything is their way. And it's, 30 years on, I'm feeling frustrated. I'm surprised you're not more frustrated than you appear.
I look at the podcast, and one that's out now, number 216 that just came out, and look at all the comments, and 98% of the comments are very good. They understand, looked at the video. The only bad comments, they didn't even look at the video. They just go ahead and put on a bad comment.
Yes.
And so I comment back and say, why don't you view the video before you make a comment?
Look, and all we can do now is really implore our listeners to spread the word. Go to Professor David Dilley's podcasts. The recent one is Global Warming Will Be Dead by 2030, and that's podcast number 216, but he has other podcasts, number 173, The Political Science and Skewing of Data, the 97, I think it is, Milankovitch and Dilley, Climate Pulse Cycles, and I think podcast 64, Real Science, CO2, and Cycles and Climate. I think I've got those right. So, the other website to go to is Professor Dilley's own website, and I'll just have to find it, globalweatheroscillations.com, or the other one, globalweathercycles.com. And you'll find it all there.
Yes, and if you can't remember the sites, just do a search, David Dilley Climate Cycles, David Dilley climate, and something would pop up.
Perfect. Yeah, look, we're so grateful to have you on. I mean, I know this is once over lightly. I mean, we sort of feel almost embarrassed to bring you down to our level on this, but it's got to happen, and it's part of the education process. And just watching your recent video was enough to say, we're not the only ones that are concerned that just trying to demonize, for instance, methane or CO2 isn't the full picture here. So look, we'll just say we're so grateful to have you on. We've taken you out of your evening comfort in Florida and Tampa, and maybe we can get you back when this thing gets a bit cooler.
We will, and we already see signs of some global cooling. The high Arctic. See, global warming begins in the Arctic, and it also ends in the Arctic. Global cooling begins in the Arctic. Well, the high Arctic, during the past two springs and summers, have had the record cold during the spring and summer months during the year 2022 and 2023. Right now, it's not as cold as last year because of the El Nino, which helps to warm up the high latitude a little bit. But the ice has also been recovering. And a lot of misconception down in Antarctica, everyone says, well, the ice is melting in Antarctica. But that's only in Southwest Antarctica, where they have all the volcanic activity going on. Mm-hmm. It's melting the ice from down below, warming the water. And the rest of Antarctica, from what I have read, the dome, most of the ice in Antarctica is actually getting deeper, getting thicker, because it's they've had some record cold temperatures down in the Antarctica area during the past couple of years. And they don't want to talk about that. They only want to talk about the ice melting from the volcanic activity, but they never say it's due to volcanic
activity. The volcanoes.
Leave that out.
Exactly. And that's why we need to keep at it.
Yeah, and let's hope global warming will be dead by 2030 and we can all get some peace, because that's all we seem to have in our media and our education system in this country. So look, again, thank you for coming on to RCR Greenwashed. We're in your debt. And look, I ask our listeners, give us feedback. We'd be keen to pass on feedback back to Professor Dilley, even if necessary. But we would love your feedback. Just send it in.
Yeah, 2057 is our number. Thank you so much, Professor Dilley, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.